namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 14, The Story of King Vena. How interesting. Text number 6. Na yastavyam na datavyam.
Na yastavyam na datavyam.
Na hotavyam dvija kvachit.
Na hotavyam dvija kvachit.
Na hotavyam dvija kvachit.
Na hotavyam dvija kvachit.
Itinya varaya dharmam.
Itinya varaya dharmam.
Itinya varaya dharmam.
Itinya varaya dharmam.
Bheri goshena sarvashaha.
Bheri goshena sarvashaha.
Na yastavyam na datavyam.
Na yastavyam na datavyam.
Na hotavyam dvija kvachit.
Na hotavyam dvija kvachit.
Itinya varaya dharmam. Veri gorshena sarvasaha.
Veri gorshena sarvasaha.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Na.
Yastavyam.
Yastavyam.
Any sacrifices can be performed.
Any sacrifices can be performed.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Na.
Datavyam.
Datavyam.
Any charity can be given.
Any charity can be given.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Na.
Hotavyam.
Hotavyam.
Any clarified butter can be offered.
Any clarified butter can be offered.
Dvijaha.
Dvijaha.
O twice born.
O twice born.
Kvachit.
Kvachit.
At any time.
At any time.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Nya. Nyavnoi. Nyavarayat.
Nyavarayat.
He stopped.
He stopped.
Dharmam.
Dharmam.
The procedures of religion.
Procedures of religion.
Bheri.
Bheri.
Of kettle drums.
Of kettle drums.
Goshena.
Goshena.
With the sound.
With the sound.
Sarvasaha.
Sarvasaha.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
So Prabhupada's translation. All the twice-born brahmanas were forbidden henceforth to perform any sacrifice. And they were also forbidden to give charity or offer clarified butter. Thus King Vena sounded kettle drums throughout the countryside. In other words, he stopped all kinds of religious rituals. Please repeat. All the twice-born
brahmanas
were forbidden. Shivar Gopinathi.
All the Brahmanas
were forbidden
to perform any sacrifice,
give charity,
or offer clarified butter.
Thus King Vena sounded kettle drums.
Throughout the countryside.
In other words,
he stopped all kinds of religious rituals.
What was committed by King Vena many years ago is at present being carried out by atheistic governments all over the world. The world situation is so tense that at any moment, government may issue declarations to stop religious rituals. Eventually the world situation will become so degraded that it will be impossible for pious men to live on the planet. Therefore, sane people should execute Krishna consciousness very seriously so that they can go back to Godhead, back home, back to Godhead, without having to further suffer the miserable conditions predominant in this universe. So This is fourth canto, and you know, we did a 1 year. 1 year, usually we have a program where we review one canto a month with our Anjana Surya Academy. For maybe like 15 years, been doing that. And 1 year we decided to go through the whole thing, you know, every purport, every text like that, completely. And five of us started off, and you know, in the first month of the year, which is right after Kartik. Kartik's the 12th month, you know, Damodar. And after about 3 months, there were two of us doing it. And one of my disciples, who's has a master's degree in education. So it was very nice. It was very intense. When you come to the third and fourth canto, you have to do that. You've got to read 30 pages a day, every day, every day, every day, every day. Yeah. And we didn't quite do it, you know, for those two cantos, but pretty much. And it was like, you know, it was one of the most intense experiences I've ever had associating with Srila Prabhupada. It was like being there with him, you know, the most confidential time of the day, every day, just reading. And so many things became apparent. And one of them was the, one way the Bhagavatam is organized. Of course, the first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet, right? And 2.2.12, it says one should not go beyond the first two cantos, as long as one is still entangled in gross illicit sex, like that. And also in the prayers by Lord Shiva, he's in the fourth canto here too, Prachetas, yeah. It also talks about anybody serious about studying Srimad Bhagavatam must begin with a very systematic study of the first two cantos, like that. It's a very nice program, these first two cantos. But after that, we go up to his thighs, third and fourth canto, his navel, the fifth canto. And in the third canto, Maharaj Parikshit, or is it Vidura? It's Vidura. He then asks Maitreya Muni to please tell me about, because there's a story about Varaha, you know, and Lord Brahma's trying to create the universe, create bodies for everybody, so everybody has like some place to live and express their desires and become purified. And in the beginning it's going kind of slow because he's producing all these children by mental process like that. Manasaputra, Atri, Shiva, the Kumaras. And it's going too slow to get, you know, bodies for everybody. So in his anxiety, then Satarupa and Swayambhuva Manu are produced like that. And they agree to be the biological father and mother of all the different species like that. They say, okay, we'll do this. Kind of like Adam and Eve, you know. But it's a problem, you know, because then we have to go down to a gross level to have this kind of activity, stimulation. And the problem is, what's the problem? They come out of his heart. They agree to be biological fathers and mothers. But they have to have some, you know, gross place, you know, some house on the earth. They can't do it up in the celestial planets. So what's the problem? Third canto.
The earth has been inundated by the flood.
Yes, the earth is down in the water. Oh my God. So I mean, people have different administrative problems. This is Brahma's problem. Okay, I finally got the process going, but now there's no place for him to live, you know. So out of his anxiety, what happens next?
Out of his nostril, Lord Brahma comes.
A little pig comes out of his nostril.
Brahma.
A little boar, there you go. And starts expanding himself bigger and bigger. You know, this may have happened to you someday also when you had administrative problems and then how came this little boy? What is this? So he saved the earth, and then the pastime is finished. And then, I think it's Baba Vidura asked Maitreya, or maybe it's either Sukadeva or Swami and Pariksit, one of the two. He says, please describe to me the other Manus and all the descendants of Manu and all the kings and you know, sages and incarnations that occur during each of these Manus, because they're all very pious kings like that. So that is almost that's all the way through the ninth canto like that. It's almost the entire Srimad Bhagavatam is organized by this question. So it's kind of like a didactic device to take us through different incarnations: Purusha avatars, Lila avatars, Guna avatars, Manvantara, Shaktivesh avatars. And then finally, we can appreciate Krishna. Because what kind of, you know, what kind of avatar is Krishna?
Avatar.
Yeah. He's Avatara Avatari. He's not an avatar. But to come to him is very difficult. And so for that we see different kinds of incarnations like that. Shakti Vesh avatars, Lila avatars, Guna avatars, Purusha avatars. Yeah. So we go through these by hearing about the descendants of Manu. We have a mnemonic device, Dap Up, or in Spanish, Dap Up. Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada. Oh, okay. Priyavrata.
Priyavrata.
And these are the five children of Manu. And this is the order they occur in the Bhagavatam, one after another. First, the three Uti sisters. Devahuti. Dapa.
Devahuti.
Akuti. Prasuti. Yeah. Then?
Priyavrata.
Uttanapada.
Uttanapada.
And Priyavrata. Yeah. So in the third canto, then there's the story of Devahuti. She married Kardama and had a son named Kapila. Whole section. In the fourth canto, it starts with Akuti. She married Ruchi, I think, and had Yajna as her son, you know, Lakshmi and Narayan as her children. Finished in half of the first chapter. Then Devahuti Akuti Prasuti, who did she marry? Very famous husband.
Kashyapa.
No.
Oh, Devahuti, who did she marry? She
married Prasuti.
Prasuti.
Bah. Daksha! Yeah. Yeah. A little comprehensive. Okay. This is the time of death. We'll get the Yamaraj with these hints. So, anyway, Prasuti married Daksha, and there's a whole story of Sati, Shiva, like that. Maybe four chapters, like that. So, we finished off Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, and then Uttanapada, right? And Uttanapada's famous son was? Dhruva, like that. And so now King Venu is in this line from Dhruva Maharaj. And that's why we're hearing the story. You know, of course, it has this message too. It's instructive about how to understand different problems in devotional life, different situations. Hansaduda told us that Prabhupada said that every single psychological circumstance you can encounter is in Srimad Bhagavatam. So if you read this and study it and take it to heart, you know, actually really contemplate these stories, you know. Sometimes I tell them in modern language and people think that there's something happening in ISKCON. I won't do it now. Oh my God, you know. What temple was that? You know, this didn't happen when Prabhupada was here. You know, it happened, you know, 5 million years ago. Same people are running off of people's wives and, you know, all these kind of strange things are happening. So take these, you know, you got to hear the stories and enter into them and appreciate, well, this is just like what's happening in my life. You know, there's a little vein in my life too, in my character. I got a little vein in my character. What happened to him? What's the problem? You know. So this is why the story is occurring, because he's in the line of Dhruva. And then next it'll go to the to Maharaj Prachinabarhi. Prithu. Then after him, Prachini Barahi. And then he hears the whole story of Paranjana, which is an analogy just to, you know, preach to him without him knowing it. Yeah. And that finishes off Canto 5 and Canto 4. The Canto 5, Dap Up, Priyavrata. And he's a very... And he's a very interesting story. And in his line, then appeared Rishabhdev. And then from Rishabhdev came Bharata Maharaj in the forest of material enjoyment when he met Maharaj Mahugana. And that finishes the fifth canto. So fifth canto is all the line of Prithu, Priyavrata. Priyavrata.
Cosmology.
Huh? Yeah, because he's describing the universal form like that to him. So the whole cosmology and structure of the universe. Yeah. And then in the sixth canto, Maharaj...
Pariksit.
Thank you. He asks Sukadeva Goswami, he says, well, everyone's going to go to hell because of their karma. Isn't there anything that can save them? You know? And he suggests, in the end, he tells them, you know, the best process is devotional service like that. And he gives the example of Ajamil. So Ajamil is there because of this question. Then we go back to the line of Uttanapada. Because Maharaj Prachinibarhi's sons, the Prachetas, they were all trying to become good grihastas. And what do you have to do if you want to be a good grihasta?
Go through austerity.
You have to go to the university. Right? So you can become a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer, and you have to study and learn so many nonsensical things which you'll never have to use ever in your life. And so many things like that. Hellish ambition, So anyway, they went off to do austerities, and then they met Lord Shiva, and he gave them a mantra, and they were, chanting.
Prachetas.
Yeah. And then they're underwater, all through the fifth canto, they're holding underwater there, doing austerities. So in the fourth canto, it goes back to them like that, and continues to their line. And they had, they're an example, a very interesting example, because one time I was giving a class in Lima, in Peru, and the topic of polygamy came up. Polygamy. And we accept...
Elizabeth.
How do you pronounce it? Polygamy, polygamy. So anyway, one husband with several wives, like that. And it came up, and we're discussing how this is part of Vedic culture, this and that. And then one blonde-haired tourist girl in Lima, she said, okay, well, if you accept polygamy, that's okay. But you also have to accept polyandria, too. Was fair, So what is polyandria?
Women having more than one husband.
Yeah, you can figure that out. Andros means male, like that. And so what can I say? It seems like, it's our modern logical liberal society, if we can allow polygamy in a controlled fashion, well, why not polyandria? So if you go on reading Prabhupada's books, on and on and on, you find the same things again and again from different perspectives until finally you get the basic things down, And then details. And then so many details, no? I mean, just specific details here and there like that. And so what's wrong with polyandria?
Number of things wrong with
it. Okay, what is polyandria? Okay,
One of them, Prabhupada said that polygamy was used in the Vedic culture because there were more ladies than there were men, and the ladies had to be protected. And therefore, in order to protect the ladies, and one, especially the Kshatriya kings or some very wealthy Vaishyas, would marry more than one lady.
But that's nothing wrong with polyandria. It's something in favor of polyandria.
Then, well...
What's wrong with it? Huh? Why are you against polyandria?
Because women, you have to know, they're supposed to be... Someone has to take care of the children.
Yeah, well, they say that husbands can take care of the children also. They can change diapers. Question here. How many grihastas have changed diapers here? Raise your hand. Okay. I've done it too. Been there, done that. Yeah.
Well, according to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that when women become unchaste...
But it's not actually unchaste. Fixed thing. So Prabhupada actually says in the story of the Prachetas, right? Prachetas married how many wives?
One.
Yeah, this So this is the example of polyandria, like that. The daughter of Pramlochan, like that.
The daughter of the moon god.
Yeah. And the Apsara, like Pramlochan. Yeah. So, when they brought Draupadi home in the Peter Brooks movie, Arjuna won her and brought her home, and Kunti's working away there, and they come in, and Bhima says, "Oh, Mataji, we got something really nice today when we were begging." And then she says, "Well, whatever it is, share it equally," like that. And so Bhima says, "But it's a woman." So she turns and looks at Draupadi, and Draupadi is shocked, and she grabs her and says, "Oh, I didn't mean that, of course, it's like I misunderstood." But then Yudhisthira was saying, but whatever a mother says, we accept that as law, like that. And adharma cannot stay in my mind, and so I don't find any adharma in this suggestion at that. So Draupadi's reaction was, look, I don't care what your mother says. I don't care what your mind says. I'm not going to marry five guys. I'll be my husband, So they went on discussing this for some time, and finally, one of the things that convinced her was this precedent of the daughter of Pramlochan marrying the Prachetas. In the Vedic culture, there's this big history of polyandria. So it's there in the Vedic culture. And also, she was inclined to the situation because of many reasons like that. So they made a very chaste relationship arrangement, you know, for this situation like that. It was also a celestial thing. It wasn't just a mundane activity like that. You know? So Prabhupada says the problem with polyandria is that female psychology is naturally to be fixed upon one man. My daddy. Back off. Yeah. My husband. Yeah? It amazes me sometimes how jealous women are, right? By nature. But that's all fits into the whole structure of how the universe is supposed to be progressive for Krishna consciousness. Or when husband go and take sannyas, my son. And ladies become so proud of their grown-up boys like that, you know? So Prabhupada says it's very rare to find a girl who's qualified enough to be control herself and to give equal love and affection to different husbands. It's very easy for her just to focus on one husband. And it's okay, forget it. Just give him all the affection, attention, love, support, you know, like that, you know. When the Pandavas went back to Godhead, they all fell down for different sins they'd done, except Yudhisthira. Even Draupadi fell down. What was her sin?
She was attached to Arjuna.
Secretly. She was giving more affection and love to Arjuna than anybody else. Like she let herself, even she couldn't do it. She couldn't, it was sinful then, you know. So, male body, female body, gross body, subtle body, different. Yeah. The subtle body is more substantial and more permanent than the gross body. Like that, it goes for many lifetimes. Yeah. So you may have feminine mentality for several lifetimes before something happens, or masculine mentality. Yeah. So all these lessons are here, right? And then Prabhupada gives his purports, all these specific instructions. Yeah. So that's the story of the Prachetas. They came out of the water, they got married. And then one of their son, I guess they only have one son. Who was that? Who was their son? Yeah, because he had to take birth again. Yeah, he had to take birth again. You know? Because he's the Prajapati who's supposed to do the actual, you know, work of getting all these bodies for all these people, and he keeps, you know, disturbing his service by his different problems. So he became the father then to his wife. You know, it's a longer story. Of eventually 50 daughters who married all the bachelor sons of Brahma, and from them they became the fathers of snakes, horses, you know, dwarfs, what else, you know, demigods, rakshasas, yakshas, and all the species of life were created. Ah, okay. And there's some little more complications like that. But it goes on like that through the descendants of Daksha, descendants of Manu, through the seventh canto. You know, so all that, so you can see how why things are happening. Why does this incarnation occur? Why is that person there? It's because of this didactic device, this genealogical device. And with that, we learn many, many lessons from many great personalities like that, which are very practical, you know, in terms of our spiritual life, our situation like that, our psychology. So much of Srimad Bhagavatam is Daivi Varna Ashram Dharma. Right? So much of Srimad Bhagavatam is really social philosophy. Psychology of women, psychology of men, psychology of kshatriyas, psychology of brahmanas, right? You know, society, how it works. But in terms of Krishna, right? In terms of spiritual advancement, you have this body, and the senses are like sails, right? And the different modes of nature are like the wind, you know? So the best way to go back to Godhead, use your karma, right? Don't reject it. No. Whatever I got, whatever my nature is, let me take advantage of it. That can engage me in doing something for Krishna, which will purify my heart. And then later on, my intelligence will become strong and I can do it without the, you know, the gross modes like that. Yeah. So, Daivi Varna Ashram Dharma is one of the biggest contents of the Bhagavatam. And studying these things, then we see all these situations like that and how it's happening to me, how it's happening to other people, what's the result, how to change it, how to help it. And then in the eighth canto, Maharaj Parikrit says, okay, you've described all the Manus, all of Swayambhava Manus' children and their pious families, but what about the other 13 Manus? Can you also describe them? So he describes all the Manus, Yagna, Ruchi, yeah, I mean, now there are so many Manus. And during these different Manvantaras, there occurs Mohini Murti, Korma, Bali Maharaj, Yeah, so many different incarnations that we're familiar with. Then finally in the ninth canto, he says, okay, now give me a detailed description of our Manu. What is the name of our Manu? Vaivasvata Manu. And he's what number, Manu? What time is it? Check your watch.
He's the male.
Yeah, if you have one of those kind of watches, you can tell. Like that.
It's 12 o'clock. It's 12 o'clock.
You sell those, right? You know? The man who has everything, right? A millennium watch. Yeah, it doesn't change. Actually, wouldn't he have to have it changed, just painted on there? So he's the seventh Manu. And we're about noontime. Yeah. And so then the ninth canto is all the descendants of Vaivasvata Manu within one manvantara. And of course it goes into the line of the sun god, the line of the moon god, and from that we get Lord Ram, and also then Krishna. So at that point, Maharaj clicks on the plus sign and whoop, expands out, and he goes into details of Krishna's incarnation. So the whole 10th canto and first part of the 11th canto are all about the incarnation of Krishna, pastimes in Vrindavan, pastimes in Dwarka and Mathura. And 11th canto is Moksha Lila, the pastimes and disappearance, like that. Then it goes back to the descendants of Manu after Krishna in the 11th canto, down to the current age. 12th canto is a summary of Srimad Bhagavatam, the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, and a little story about Markandeya Rishi. He squeezes in there somehow or other. And so that's the whole structure. It's very systematic how it's organized like that. And in some ways, it's distinct from other Puranas in the fact that it focuses on Krishna, it goes in a very systematic fashion like that. A very nice discussion, Radhika made a presentation on how the Bhagavatam is a very unique position for Indologists even, or to speak of us. Like that, So now is, of course, the story of Vena. He's why is he such a rascal? Is there any reason like that?
He's the son of the daughter of death personified.
Yeah, so he has this, he can't control himself in some ways, you might say, But he got this body, maybe it's his karma and stuff like that. His father's name was?
Anga.
Anga. And he was a rascal also? He was a decent guy, but he became so frustrated he just took... just took sannyas and walked away from the situation, which maybe wasn't the proper thing to do, right? Yeah. But then he left with nobody to be king, so the sages enthroned Vena because he was the king, and he had the potency to do the job, right? He had the power to do the job. But then his deficiencies were so strong, we'll see that in the end, they had to correct the situation because he was stopping all sacrifice for Vishnu, all religious activities. Why? Because I'm God. Why do you say there's some God other than me, Prahlad? It's a very common idea, common complex, common psychological problem like that. So Prabhupada says, the same thing is going on now. And he says the world situation is so tense that at any moment governments may issue declarations to stop all religious rituals. So this was how many years ago? When Prabhupada wrote this, maybe 30 years ago? At least 30 years ago. So one time Prabhupada was walking with Srupa Damodar Maharaj and Srupa Damodar Brahmachari and in the Cheviot Hills, and he's talking about science, and he says these rascal scientists are cheating people. Then Maharaj says, they've always been cheating people, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada says, no, not always, just for the last few hundred years, like that. And he says, whether you preach or not, it'll be finished in 50 years, like that. Because people are becoming more intelligent. They can see the world, they can see different cultures, they become educated in history, and they can see that science is not giving us what it promised, right? I'd forgotten this, but one devotee, Dara Krishna, South America, he reminded me of this. When we were children, back in the 60s or something like that, science was at the peak of its power, like that. And, after World War II, that was one of the big changes because radar was invented, you know, atomic bomb was invented, and so many, you know, things like this, medicine. So after World War II, when things settled down, science became the, you know, the predominant, you know, intellectual force in the world like that. Yeah. And this thing was there, statements by people, by Watson and Crick, Nobel laureates, that we've discovered DNA, RNA, and we know how life is transmitted. And so now, within a short time, we will be creating life on a regular basis like that. So that was all the propaganda at that time. When they installed the first nuclear reactor for commercial electricity, and about, I don't know, maybe like 15 years ago or something, 20 years ago, they decommissioned it and had gone through its normal cycle exactly like they planned, its whole cycle of activity, and it was time to, you know, find some place to put the nuclear waste like that. Oops, we didn't know what to do with this, you know. What do we do with it? But the other thing was that when they were decommissioning it, they were reading the inauguration address that they gave when they inaugurated this thing, the politicians, the scientists, and they said, the inauguration of this nuclear reactor, an atomic reactor, to produce commercial electricity will mark the beginning of an era in human history when electricity will become so cheap that nobody will even bother to charge you for it. Like that. So, anybody here pay an electric bill? Yeah. Are you getting it for free? No? Huh. What are you paying per month? Oh, so science cheated you. And they were laughing about this, you know. Yeah, yeah. So you see, the scientists have changed their thing. Well, maybe this will, perhaps, and, you know, like that, you know. So Prabhupada said within 50 years this perspective will be finished, like that, you know. And so maybe he said at this point, any time like that. But, you know, devotees have gone on preaching, you know, spreading Krishna consciousness according to their ability, their nature, in so many ways, in the academic atmosphere, person to person, you know, food for life, prasadam distribution, you know, so many places, so many ways, art, culture, we've gone on preaching. And my observation is that the situation has changed. I mean, I've seen, for example, my own activity in the Bhaktivedanta Institute. Prabhupada inspired Bhakti Sarup Damodar, Dr. T.D. Singh, to become a devotee and to dedicate himself to spreading this knowledge to the scientists. Okay. Then somehow or other I got involved in the whole circuit like that, and he, you know, inspired me with the importance. Other people too have been to Sarup, and okay, I surrendered and I hate science, but let me go ahead and do it, you know, so however I can, you know. And so I was supporting it with the Institute for many years, certain ways. So then when we were in Calcutta, we were trying to have this Second World Congress for Science and Religion. And it was, oh boy, it was austerity. Unbelievable. It was the hottest summer in 30 years. And we had almost no money. I couldn't even take taxis. I had to take buses. And if you've been on a bus in the summer in Calcutta, done that? No? Grab your wrist here, like this. Take your wrist. This is a little science experiment. Take your wrist, yeah. Now, you take your wrist. Yeah. Squeeze as hard as you can. Hard as you can. Okay. That's the compression of people on a bus in Calcutta. Okay. Now let's bring it up to like 40 degrees centigrade and 92% humidity. Okay. Now let's go on Sankirtan. Yeah. Yeah. So I was surviving in the midst of this, you know. And getting out there and meeting people. And one of the people I met was Professor Samaresh Bandopadhyay, who had been head of the Department of Ancient History and Culture at Calcutta University. So it was Krishna's arrangement, you know. And so I was talking to him about what we're doing, and he became inspired, he participated, and he actually, you know, really became, you know, much broader vision. I heard him say, one of his friends, I used to think that these Vaishnavas were tikiwalas, you know, these little kind of inferior kind of consciousness. And ISKCON always for drug addicts and people like that, you know, whatever, you know. But oh, after associating with them and, you know, starting to read their acharyas, Prabodhananda Saraswati, the people, I begin to appreciate that, no, this is far beyond me. Very, organization, very much worth investigating, like that, so on. So he changed, you know. So Prabhupada, Bhakti Sudhamana Maharaj, Mahaprabhu Zakswami, Precious Summers, Bandhapajaya. And he started inspiring his department. You know, we haven't got any money, we haven't got any interest, nobody's interested in ancient history. You know. Okay, so let's have a thing on science and technology in ancient India. And then you see what happens. And yeah, the Minister of Education for all of India was there, the head of Calcutta University, the president of the West Bengal Science Association. This creates interest. They're on national television, ancient history. And it was very interesting. It was a very revealing thing about science and technology in India. It was always there. The British propaganda that they never had this, well, it's not true. They had it, but they thought it wasn't worth it to develop it like that. And so now, all over India, seeing this, you know, different universities are having conferences on science and technology in ancient India like that. You know? And so do they know how they were inspired to do this? Do they know that it came from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati? No. They know that it came from other universities doing it like that. So that's one line, you know, where you can see how the world has changed without people knowing it because of Srila Prabhupada. You know, that, so on. So many things like that. Other people probably have their own experiences how the world has changed because, you know, what Prabhupada was doing like that. You know? So you're saying the world is so tense now that any moment people might declare a completely atheistic state like that. And I think it's changed. You know, actually, things have improved to some degree. Certain countries where I preach, South America, it's not true. You know, the danger there is declaring a completely fascist state, you know, of Catholic fascism, and even that's like, you know, not very likely. But, you know, irreligion, atheistic culture. You know, okay, science is the predominant way of thinking, but it's not going to stop, you know, close the churches. You know Houston Smith, famous educator? Houston Smith. He wrote a book called The Religions of Man, which for, I don't know, maybe 30 years, 20, 30 years, was the biggest, most used college textbook on world religions like that. He discussed every religion. And he came to our 1984 Congress on Science and Religion in Bombay. And nice man like that, you know. And then he updated his book and called Religions of People. Because you can't say religions of man, because that's like, you know, sexist. You know? So that's called religions of people, like that. You know? And still, and a very, very intelligent person, very sharp thinker, you know, theologian. So anyway, he wrote a book recently, which I saw on the, I can't remember the name of it, but it was like, the position of faith and religion in the modern world, and how we should go ahead from here. So his solution about how to go ahead is, that doesn't seem very nice. But his survey of what is the global consciousness intellectually is really worth reading. He, this person, that person, he said, they said. He really seems to be tied into what's happening in the world, intellectual life like that. And his conclusion is that things are pretty much, you know, the same situation as Prahlad and Hiranyakasipu. After Hiranyakasipu tried to kill Prahlad every single possible way he could, and he couldn't do it. And he's sitting there like, you know, looking at him like that, you know. And Prahlad's sitting there looking back at him like this. And finally he says, you know, where does your power to defy me come from, Prahlad? Like that, you know. And because he just cannot figure this out. Tried to poison him, tried to trample him under elephants, tried to throw him off of cliffs, tried to burn him to death, and the most horrible, horrible form of a attempted assassination at all.
Mother tried to give him poison.
No, worse than that. He sent him to school. Right? He said, this, okay, we'll destroy his mentality like that. We'll send him to school. Yeah, and even that didn't work, right? He converted his classmates. You know, probably all the cobras started dancing and singing along with him. Right? Yeah. So he said that, you know, the science, materialistic science, the evil scientists, because not all scientists are evil, you know, the materialistic, you know, atheistic philosophy like that, you know, the Vena, you know, there, we are God, you know, man is the measure of all things, and I am the Nobel laureate, like that, you know, worship me. You know. Yeah, this mentality, they know they've had all the money, all the political control, all the control of education, all the power for how many years? Since the time of Galileo. Galileo was in the opposite, situation. But after that, they came into power, and they have not been able to destroy this fantasy of a soul, right? A soul. Even when Crick recently wrote this, we have to get rid of this mythology of a soul once and for all. There is no soul. There's only tobacco. It's like, that's, I read one science book one time. It was the altruistic gene. The guy, he was talking about, why is there altruism in the world? Why are people generous? Well, it's some kind of genetic thing, It was a really bizarre thing how he squeezed that out. But I took the book from the library and was looking at it. It was all full of animals fighting over women and food and stuff like that. It was, it was all this, pictures like, that. Looking through it, then there's some kind of strange smell. Finally I realized what it was. It was tobacco, right? The person who was reading the book, it's like, the only way you could possibly accept this philosophy was to make yourself stupid enough to by smoking, And the whole book was just permeated with this, tobacco. So, but anyway, they're so determined that they just won't give up. And different things in Krishna's arrangement, they get some success, like Vena. And so then they want to, just use their power, their intelligence to establish themselves. So they've been able to create at least a secular environment, right? They haven't been able to destroy religion, to stop all sacrifices like that. They weren't as powerful as Vena, But, they haven't been able to eliminate it. And so he said, this is the modern world. This is the preaching environment. Is that these guys, their back is kind of against the wall, like that. And you see their arguments are starting to come with a little bit of edge of panic on them, like that. In America, the big philosophy is the creationists. It's argument from design. Okay, we're not going to say God created the universe, but we're going to go from the point that science can take the argument from design as its basis of investigation, rather than the argument from chance. And so they're presenting their cases and they're being defeated, but every time around, they're getting, losing more and more points. And the people are, so you can feel kind of a panic entering into the scientists, like, we're going to lose control here. So this is the preaching environment. It's starting to really change like that. And of course, a cornered rat fights like anything. So best thing is to try and give all these scientists an option, which some people are doing. What's that guy? Darwin on Trial from University of California. He's telling him, we're not going to get rid of science. It's okay. You'll still have a job. You'll still have prestige like that, But we want to make it a little more broad so everybody has a chance to look at things from their perspective like that. So the preaching atmosphere has changed, I think, like that. But this possibility is there, depending on Krishna's arrangement, some powerful guy. And so the basic principle Prabhupada is saying is, get out of this place, right? If you have some work to do, preacher, okay, do it. That's okay. You're not a part of the material world then, But if you're here, kind of dawdling along, becoming purified, it's a very nasty place, And some places like in China, the Middle East, like that, it's, horrible, dangerous place like that for preaching.
Africa,
right, some places terrible, right, for being a devotee. Vibhishana said being in Lanka was like being a tongue amidst sharp teeth, like that. He was a devotee, but it was such a thing, so terrible. And of course, in Russia, the environment, we can see the environment, what it was like, before. So it can be like that all over the world. We're actually very fortunate in many ways. The environment is not so bad as it has been in the past. So any comments then? Questions? About Lena? Okay.
So if I understood correctly, you said that this man
he knows the Bhagavad Gita pretty well, and he had little contact with the Bhagavatam, but not too much. Amogalila? Amogalila?
Yeah.
He talked to him regularly. I think he may have left his body by now, but he was like, you know, a colleague of his at the university and stuff, and talked to him. And he had a certain view, you know, like that. But he didn't specifically make that comparison. But that's the situation, is that they're just like... And what was the latest thing? The latest explanation of why people are religious?
There's a religious gene.
There's a religious gene. Ah! I got it figured out. Okay. Now all we got to do is track it down. Find out where it's hiding in there, and then by genetic engineering we can finally get rid of God like that. Okay. Shema Bhagavatam ki. Shapapa ki. Maharaj Vena ki. One last thing, one last point real quick. Book distribution key. So just now we finished reprinting Light of the Bhagavad. It's out of print, the small edition, and not going to print again. So we printed it in South America. Hardcover, stitch bound, no, full color like that. And in Spanish and English. Like that. I think it's one of the first. Actually, the other bilingual book I think of is also Light of the Bhagavad in Chinese and English. So probably this next week we'll have a program discussing our whole preaching program with this and using this as a preaching tool like that. So you can look at it one day. So Paul Podkey.